Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Yeah. Welcome to J.Ill, a production of iHeartRadio. Yeah.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to J.Ill Podcast. This is Jill Scott, and I'm here with my sister friends, Aja Graydon Danzla.
That's myself.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, everyone.
Yeah, hi. And the lovely Laya St. Clair.
I felt all that stretch, Jill. I felt it. I know it's the episode. Let's go.
Let's go. We've been waiting. This has been the wait. The wait is over, darling.
Okay, I'm not gonna make you wait anymore.
Yes.
I was about to say a whole story, but I'll tell you later. Well, welcome everybody. we have an incredible guest here today. Her name is Kika. Keith, I love your name for it. Kika. Kika. Ooh, it's got attitude. It's got spunk. Kika. Oh, Kika, Keith, please, Laya, if you'd be so kind as to share these accolades of this lovely, lovely young woman.
I just first have to share a story because I understand that I live in Los Angeles, right? It is not a majority Black place. And when I lived in Hollywood, the one reason that I was scared to leave was because I had a Black dispensary, a Black-owned dispensary. This is not something you hear a lot, period, better yet in Los Angeles. So when I moved to Leimert Park, and I cold walked down the street because I passed by a dispensary that had a big gorilla on the top of it with a lot of colors, I was like, well, all right. Let me just stop and see what they got. I walked in. It was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. And I'm talking about the colors. I've been in a lot of dispensaries. Yes, I'm telling the truth. I've been in a lot of dispensaries. But the color, the friendship, the feeling of culture. I'm talking about a dispensary, y'all. When I walked in, it changed my life so much that every time I have somebody that comes out of town, I'm like, let's walk up the street and let's go. Well, it just so happens on one particular day, I bring my godmother, Deanna Williams, who's been a guest on this show. I said, let's go to the dispensary. I'm about to blow your mind. We walk in and we see a familiar face named Marco Barrio, who happened to be the manager of the other Black dispensary that I had moved from in Hollywood. And he goes on to tell me the story of the owner of this place and the story of the struggle of how this place came into fruition in this neighborhood. People fought to make this happen, to make this dispensary here. There's a video when you walk in that gives you the short of the story and the celebration with Yoruba priests and priestesses about how they made this happen. And so Marco walks us to the office to introduce us to the woman who has founded this lovely space with her mural on the wall outside of the 7-Eleven. I'm sorry. And her name is Big Kika. Big Kika's presence, she's not just an entrepreneur. She's an activist. She has been in this community for a long time doing amazing things. And now she has bought all kinds of peace to the community. Ladies and gentlemen, not just Kika Keith, Big Kika.
Big Kika.
I'm gonna keep my thoughts to myself, but baby.
Listen.
It's the big for me. That tells me all the things I need to know. You should have led with that.
So I should have said that when Jill and Asia displayed that they want, and Amber said that they wanted to do a show about cannabis, weed, whatever you want to call it, I said, I have the person. I don't know her, but I'm going to get her here.
Yeah.
And here she is.
Round of applause.
Yes.
Come on, y'all. What a blessing to be here.
Thank you for being here. Uh-huh. Wow. You own the first Black-owned dispensary. I mean, I would assume it's the first woman, female owned, Black woman owned dispensary. Damn.
Yeah, and it is.
You went hard to paint, huh?
Yeah, very intentionally. And it is the first Black woman owned. There are some pioneers, Black men that came before me. But yes, you know, that was a part of the mission, not to be the first, but to knock the doors down.
Come on.
Yeah. Yes.
So can you talk about this? Can you talk about this story? When you walk into your shop and you do see this video, a lot of people weren't there. They don't know the story of your struggle and how you got into even this world. Can you just break that down for us a little bit?
Yeah. You know, I always like to go back to my roots because it was my parents and their profound love for Black people and Black history and Black culture that they just ingrained in me since birth. And so when I learned about the opportunity for recreational cannabis in Los Angeles, I was like, wait a minute, there's actually laws in the book that will benefit Black and brown people who suffered the devastation from the war on drugs. And I was born in Pennsylvania, but raised in Los Angeles. And, you know, I witnessed that in South Central LA. And I witnessed the fact that I had to take my daughter to 10 different schools because the schools in my community were not adequate. And we know where all that stems from. And so when I learned about the opportunity to get a license, it really was to be more about more than just myself, to help as many of us get through and cross the finish line. I had a beverage company prior to entering into the cannabis space, Guerrilla Life. And I know how hard it was. I had my own manufacturing facility, my own distribution. I had 3 refrigerated vehicles. We take the Whole Foods and Gelson's and Bristol Farms. And I knew how many years it took me that we would work at 1 o'clock in the morning to make sure a health inspector didn't come in because I didn't know shit about running no equipment and not doing it compliantly, coming from making it in the kitchen to then being at a facility. And I knew when I heard about this and the opportunity for our people to be a part of the industry, that the way they set it up was designed to fail and that I had to prepare to fight. And I figured I'm fighting for my ancestors that couldn't be a part of the cotton industry, tobacco, alcohol, you name it, up to the tech industry. Everything, they've kept us out of it. And this was the first time that there were actually laws on the book to give us priority with licensing. If you came from inner city communities that were disproportionately affected by cannabis arrests, if you had a cannabis arrest or conviction, if you were low income, those were the qualifiers to be a part of priority licensing. And so I knew it was going to be a fight. I didn't know it was going to be this kind of fight. I went inactive on Whole Foods shelves in 2017, thinking that it would take 9 months because they were opening up in 2018. And it literally took us 3 years in a lawsuit against the city of Los Angeles to be able to open our doors.
Wow. Even with the legislation that was on the books that was supposed to make it easier for you, because I just want to be clear on that, because I think a lot of times we think, oh, some laws have been passed, a program exists, or such and such is already on the books. How come people aren't taking advantage? Because there's still going to be some, you know, some things in our way, some things we have to move around and some tenacity necessary. And I'm sure also a massive financial, you know, burden, because we're talking about lawyers are not free, court costs are not free. And obviously the licensing itself is not free, because I, you know, and please educate me, because I think
the last that I heard is that even the license itself is very expensive, that it's a huge financial undertaking. And so, you know, that in a lot of ways that can leave a lot of our entrepreneurs out of the running from the gate. So was there any kind of anything on the books around like financial help or?
Been selling weed for years and can't sell weed. Like, years. How does that work?
Hey, my dad calls it the Trojan horse.
Ooh.
They had to get voters to vote it in. And so the platform was always around, we're going to write the governor of California. I hear the same thing in New York, Chicago. We're going to right the wrong of the war on drugs, and we're going to prioritize this community. Yet they don't set up education and training. They're not teaching compliance and regulation. There is no access to capital. They have no oversight over these predatory agreements. We call them sharecropper agreements, where these white folks were coming into the hood and looking for people that had cannabis convictions and arrests and making them a straw man and enticing them. I had a mom one time come to me and say, listen, can you talk to my son? She was like, he works at Foot Locker and he's not understanding him signing away for $7,000 a month. It's pennies on the dollar. I'm saying some dispensaries make that in the first half of their day. And so it was very obvious, which is why I had to end up really standing in the position that I did, how much of a political game this was. And it was really about, once they passed that law, every single month changing little words in the law to make sure that we couldn't get in, just to say that they gave us the opportunity. And, you know, that has been the fight. And that is, you know, where the real work to this day, right? New York is just opening. Just opened their first dispensary. But if you look at it, it's a way to eradicate. They're mad all these years not being able to get the money our brothers and sisters are making on the streets, right? Yeah. So once you legalize it, then you're able to enforce it. And so that has become the game. In LA, they had $10 million allocated for education and funding. But as soon as they started it, before they opened up the social equity program, they moved those funds to enforcement because those existing marijuana dispensaries, which were in LA, 187, only three were Black. And then as soon as it was time for the social equity program, all those white folks that got all this money and they lobbying, they go on to the politicians and they're like, wait, don't open more licenses for social equity. First, you need to enforce and shut down the other illegal ones. Where are those at? You know, there are people still in our neighborhoods, and that has become the vicious game that every day we're trying to dismantle what they've set up.
More real talk after the break.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans, and yet there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
To have to be aware of not only your own business practices, but also keeping abreast of all the changes that are happening at a legal and a political level. That sounds like an extreme amount of diligence.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot to kind of constantly be aware of. You have to be so hyper aware. What are some of the kinds of like
the coalition, right? Like y'all have a coalition. Or...
Yeah. What are the things you have in place that are like helping you? What are your supports? What are the things you have that are helping you to stay on top of all of that?
Jeez. The community. When I realized that early on, we started having classes in coffee shops in Leimert Park. You know, where we were literally, remember Sheree Franklin and a group, we would go down to Denny's on Crenshaw at midnight after the kids were asleep. And we literally printed out hundreds of pages of the regulations.
Wow.
And we would read them and reread them. And then we would create cliff notes. Once we made the cliff notes, then we started holding classes. And the next thing you know, 10 turned into 20, turned into 30. And these folks, even the neighborhood councils, because I also knew these tax dollars were supposed to go into our inner city communities. That was the other sales part, right? It wasn't just about giving the licenses. It was that when we generate these billions of dollars, now we're going to help fund these underprivileged programs. So they weren't doing that. And that became the next biggest effort is going into the neighborhood councils. I would go to the block clubs and educate the elders and tell them, like, it's not just us getting licenses. Y'all need to fight for these tax dollars. And they became the coalition. I started Life Development Group. And we would organize buses to go down to these city council meetings because you got to get public comment in order to halt this. And we would create little scripts and note cards. And we would consistently have 20, 30 people that were rotating and out. It took me 2.5 years to even get to licensing. So we turned our dispensary, because you had to have a property in order to apply. Another trick back. $12,000 a month was my rent on an empty building.
Right. No business going in and out. So
no business going in. But you had to have a property in order to apply.
Wow. Right?
So, you know, fortunately, I had an investor early on that was vested that helped fund me not working and fighting. And whether it was getting the buses or whatever was needed, because he knew that that was the only way we were going to win. And so that allowed us to educate the community and actually created like grassroots lobbyists. Mm. And so I call our dispensary Guerrilla RX the house that people built, because we would not be here if it weren't for the fact that those people heard what I was saying, took it on, and became a part of the force that made sure that not just myself, but hundreds of others were able to open their doors.
So level-headed.
Yes. Yeah.
So level-headed. And the completion, going to the completion. We get a lot of big ideas and go, oh, yeah, we're going to do that. But then you realize how hard it is. And that the first, you know, seven people turned into three. And then those three turned into one. And then it's all over. You're starting all over again. And then the legalese of it all. Like, yeah. Oh, if there's anything I hate to do, is sit in front of any kind of contract. Now you're talking legislation. Oh my God. Wow.
Yeah.
And then the nuance is the changing of words would change the entire law.
Come on. I'd say it's like the King James version of the Bible, right? Like they deliberately mix up words to complicate it for us. And look, 95% of these license holders across the nation are white men.
Yeah.
And so I don't say
not
that
a surprise.
In any particular way other than the truth of the matter.
You say it as it is, because it is what it is. Sorry.
Come on. Yeah. Now they have lobbyists. They hire attorneys and advisors. that do this part. You said it earlier. I was like, I did not come in. I am a serial entrepreneur. I love business. I didn't come here to be a politician or do policies or lobbying, mm-hmm. and how much time it took out of where I should have been using to build my business.
Yeah. But it's the weird kind of necessary tax that you have to pay as a Black entrepreneur, where you got to play all these roles.
And we're in the music.
Yeah, we're in the music business or in any other business. It's the same thing. It's like you sign up to sing songs, you end up doing 9,000 other jobs. It's just in order just to kind of stay competitive and or to stay alive, not even just competitive, but just to stay present. I think it's just like it speaks to what it is. But can I just say this? It needed, and everybody knows I'm not unique in this thought. But it took a Black woman to jump in there. I'm sorry, it's just a fact. This is what really, in the end of the day, what people miss is the true kind of core of what feminism really is all about and how Black women invented it. Because the idea around the empowerment of community based on need and vulnerability is an understanding that at the core that Black women understand to the bone marrow. This is how we're just wired. We're wired to understand the needs of many. We are wired to understand that our success really doesn't mean anything if everyone else around us is not able to maintain and sustain in the same ways. We're understanding this. So it's like the idea of being a Black woman entrepreneur has to exist in this space. So I want everybody to be really, really careful to listen mm-hmm. to what Kika is saying, mm-hmm. because right now we have a lot of misunderstanding around Black excellence and generational wealth and a lot of LLC talk. Mm-hmm. Let's make sure that we listen to what she's saying. You cannot be entrepreneurial or business minded if you're not community minded. Mm-hmm. If you are not mixing those two things together, if one thing does not inform the other, then you're not making any kind of systemic change. You are just simply making dollars for yourself. And you simply making dollars for yourself has nothing to do with the encouragement, the empowerment of the community that's going to come behind you. She said specifically that this was about not being the first, but opening up the doors for mm-hmm. other people. That is a key thing. Simply being the first doesn't mean that you have done opened up a door. Being the first is just being the first. You can be the first, you know, Black capitalist billionaire who exploits people. Do you want to be that? No, you don't.
And understand that the attitude, this energy, and this glow that you guys feel from Kika is funneled through everybody around her and that whole dispensary, all those employees. When you walk in there, it is a sense that they are empowered. They are happy. They are, sister, welcome to the store. You look beautiful. What is that? It's just, it's in. And that to be said, Kika, I'm wondering when you started at the Denny's, how this has spread now, right? Because I know that, shout out to Virgil, who California Cannabis has about 3 locations, Black owner, but can you talk about some of the things that have come with this and that have been built out of this coalition?
Yeah, you know, from like development group spawn, Social Equity Owners and Workers Association. And I understood and saw from person after person that just came in with ridiculous predatory contracts, and the fight that we had to do with the city and with the state, that we needed to unionize and really be a collective force. And so that's where the lawsuit spawned from, because the city of LA, after $300,000 in debt of holding this property, they opened up the licensing process finally for social equity about 2 years later. It was supposed to be a first come, first serve. So the fastest person to upload your application online, the first 100, and they kind of like a, you know, some tickets, Ticketmaster, some sneakers or something.
That's crazy. That's crazy. I'm sorry. That's just
crazy.
No, but just going back to them little things, they know in the hood, for the people who qualify, we have the slowest internet services, right? So all of those things, they knew we were going down and telling them, like, these white folks are using bots in order to make sure that their people get in early. And you know how God will work.
Bots.
I happened to be in a room with the person that got in 10 minutes early before the start time. And as God will work it, I had organized about 30 people were in a room that we were all looking at the clock and going to do our application at the same time. And we have folks screen record their application. So we actually had the video recording when the person
so
got
smart.
In 10 minutes early. So when it came out that we looked at the list and out of the 100, maybe 19 were Black. There was about 30 Armenians on there. We did not have no representation. I was like, oh, no. And so that's where the Social Equity Owners and Workers Association really formed as we organized to file a lawsuit against the city of Los Angeles. And, you know, we did like Obama, the beginning campaigns were using $1 and $5 donations to hire a Black attorney that represented us. And we filed that lawsuit against the city of LA. They settled and we got 100 additional retail licenses for equity. And then that's how I was able to open my doors and 99 others. And it has been that type of work from taking that on the city council and stomping on them. And I use some tactics that my parents taught me when I was young, just reading about our history. Like people said, we couldn't do it. And we were getting out with picket signs and organizing folks around the clock. And we wouldn't stop was the key. That it, even if it were 5 or 10 of us, we wouldn't stop. We would be at every meeting and press and press. And we've seen that's the only way that it will work. And yeah, we've been pushing that way ever since.
We hear so often that is fantastic. And it just shows everyone that's listening within listening ears what it really takes. And when I say it, I'm talking about any level of justice that you're looking for in this particular place. We're talking about, you know, people say, oh, the marches don't work and the picketing doesn't work. Well, it we're talking about longevity. It is that refusing to give up spirit. You know, it's that. I think what's been working in America is that we get exhausted after a while.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They count on that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then you found another 99 business owners or people that wanted to start businesses. Mm-hmm. Just tell them the truth here. Sometimes even with an opportunity, you have people that won't show up for it. How did you find the people that were like, yes, I want to open a business. Yes, here's my business plan. How did you find those people?
Really, that real grassroots energy. Like, for real, we were at coffee shops and workforce development centers in the hood. And it would start with 5 people, and then they would tell their other friends. And it was just, for real, word of mouth about people who really wanted it. Mm-hmm. Right. Everybody wanted this opportunity. I remember early on, they would have ads on Facebook that would have yachts and, you know, Ferraris and be like, don't you want to be in the cannabis industry? Come sign up for the social equity program. Mm. And so you had those folks, which were the biggest portion. Right. So now when I say that 100, maybe a good 20 of them were our folks. Right. Because we just couldn't control that. But you had so many more that were going for that, you know, and still go for it to this day as these licenses continue that are down to get that $10,000 a month and give away that generational wealth, because that is in the licenses. It is not in selling. It is not in your monthly, you know, going back to the long haul. You really, everything we do as a people better be for our children's children. It better be, you know, I mean, we're not going to ever see or feel it in our lifetime if we don't make those moves collectively. And so those were the folks, Jill, that were harder to gather, the ones that weren't willing to compromise, the ones that were willing to stand and do the hard work and be relentless about it. And those numbers were much smaller. But those small numbers, once again, we never had hundreds of people protesting. You know, I mean, it was a consistency of having 20 or 30 people always showing up. And a lot of the times it was the same 15, and we rotated that other 15 or 20 for the folks that would only show up once or twice.
Yeah, I was jealous that I moved here after that. I was seriously jealous. I was like, I wanted to be a part of the progress. Yeah.
I mean, I say this all the time when we talking about like school stuff. I'd be like, everybody, oh, parents don't involve. I'm like, y'all, come on now. Y'all know the PTA is 5 parents. You know it's 5. It's the same five. It's the same five till it rotate to the new five, right? And it's like, and I think a lot of that also has to do with, you know, not to make excuses or anything like that. I do think that Black folk are tired, and they are, you know, and they don't always have the time, the money, the energy, the education. And that's one thing that just really just sticks out for me. That's like sticking with my heart is the education piece, because I think that's what motivates people. People feel motivated when they have understood the full grasp of what they're looking at, and they can actually see themselves as a part of it. It's like, mm-hmm. if they don't understand it, then it just always ends up being a pipe dream, you know? Like, it's just a thing that exists out there that people say you can have, but then when you get there, you're like, no, I don't actually see myself there. Because,
and people are counting on you feeling that way too, so they can be the 10% or 1%.
Isolated from the reality of things, right? Mm-hmm. And this is one thing I think that is really valuable about what you're saying, or at least what I'm getting from what you're saying, which is inspirational for me, is that your parents instilled a sense of fight in you by you understanding, knowing your history of your family and the history of your culture. And that's why that's super important, because you can never know what your child's life or what the children in your community's life is going to be like in the future. You don't know what business they're going to get into. But what you do know is that the value of what you're teaching them, the values that you share with them, they're going to take into those different industries. I'm sure your parents ain't no idea you're going to be selling cannabis. But the way that you're able to take what they instilled in you and apply that out into the world can only be making them proud, can only be making them look at you in amazement and inspiration, because this is what our children do when they know who they are. And we've had this conversation.
Ooh, wait, slow down. Hold on.
Sorry.
say that again.
This is what you can accomplish when you know who you are. When your children know who they are, they can go out into the world and take that into any room, because they will not believe the lie that somebody tells them when they get there. They're like, you lying, because that ain't who I am. See, you playing
with
me.
We just had this conversation before we started recording. We're looking at the background. We can see this, so we'll kind of explain it to you. There's a fantastic hot pink wall behind Big Kika, and there are her family members. Everybody looks like beautiful and strong. Yeah. So
this is her shop, y'all. This is how you feel that feeling. You get overwhelmed when you walk in. I wish I could. I wanted y'all to just come with me, because it's a dispensary. I'm not supposed to get overwhelmed by Black emotion. You know what I'm saying?
But you are. In the beginning of our conversation today, I was telling you I was reading a collection of essays by Zora Neale Hurston, and in the introduction, it talks about the Black aesthetic. And that's what is so important, is to get into understanding our state of being. Our state of being is what we take with us everywhere that we go. So, yes, it is important for you to walk into a dispensary and feel that.
But I didn't know. How did she know?
The Black aesthetic that's important, that becomes the standard to which you enjoy and enter into the world.
That can be a standard? The world.
Yes, ma'am.
But look at all of our spaces. Look at all of our spaces. Mm-hmm. We have our ancestors on the wall. You know, we're like-minded people in that way. And I know for certain, when there is a legacy involved, legacy, yes, but when you also, like they just said, when you know who you are, it matters that much more. It matters what you're doing and how you're presenting. And it matters that much more to you. So you'll fight for it a little harder.
Yeah. If not, hold on. I'm next to a table. My not next to my wall. I'm next to my bedside table. So
there they go. There they go.
Yeah, there they go.
We're gonna take a quick break and then we'll be right back.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans, and yet there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from the Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow the Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future.
It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Can you please talk about the insides of your store and not just the aesthetic, but also I told the girls, I was like, I'm collecting pins thanks to your store of Nina Simone, Grace Jones, and Minnie Riperton. And you also have a chest in there that's just, it just highlights brown and black cannabis owning items. I just, can you talk about what, once you got in, how you was going to make it look like?
Yeah, that's so funny that y'all are talking about my grandparents, because Nana and my grandmother behind me, in her house, she used to keep the Christmas tree up to at least June. As long as it wasn't getting brittle, we would have to keep on filling up the water. And she would literally, even in the daytime, have these colorful lights on her tree. And then after June, she would have us take her little fake plant and put the Christmas tree lights around it. And people would come into her house, our friends, and be like, I don't know what it is. Your grandmother's house, I just feel the love. If I don't know what the feeling is. So I was very deliberate when you go in with these color choices, and the color blocking are bright colors like her Christmas tree lights. We even have the crafted on Crenshaw with the neon lights behind it, to really accentuate this brightness, the yellow walls. So I also, speaking about the Black aesthetic and Black women, had a Black woman designer design the space, Jocelyn Joy. And so all of those things were very intentional. The dispensary is on Crenshaw Boulevard, and it is right at the bottom of Baldwin Hills, Windsor Hills, which is the largest Black community as far as income and wealth in the United States. But very rarely do those folks come down the hill to Crenshaw.
Oh, and I so tell them even, all about it when I go up there, okay. Though.
Even that in the design and the intent. So I'm so glad you feel that. When I was sitting with Jocelyn day after day, I was like, but it has to feel so that the grandmoms and aunties up the hill will come down here. And so that was always the intent for our people and the intergenerational mix that we would really purpose from having my product in Whole Foods and health food stores. And that just being, the name is Gorilla RX Wellness Co., right? And it is really based, my parents, we were vegetarians in the 70s.
Of course.
When it wasn't popular. And so that's just my whole being and what I wanted to give to the community. So even in the design, a part of that was, I wanted to feel like you're going into a Whole Foods or GNC vitamin section, right? And so unlike stores that are typical, like Apple stores, they kind of set up dispensaries nowadays, are really sterile, mm-hmm. white and glass boxes. We put most of our inventory is on the floor, and it's stocked like a grocery store. So when you're walking in, you don't feel that inhibition about asking. You're met at the door by a product specialist. You have your own personal shopper that walks you through the whole store. We have
a bud tender.
Oh, yeah, yo, sorry, a bud tender.
Yes.
We have the largest selection of Black-owned brands and women-owned brands in the state of California. We're very deliberate. I remember one time in Whole Foods, we became really friends with the receiver, brought him a Gorilla Life hoodie, and he moved Naked Juices out of the section and put our Gorilla Life drinks on that prime shelf space. And it was at that point that I understood, A, that you could do that, but B, the even thought process of where products are stored and housed. So you have these stores that be like, oh yeah, well, we carry Black brands, but they're over in the corner. Mm-hmm. We deliberately put the whole U-Bar in the front to be Black owned brands where it's the first thing you see. They don't have to pay for no shelving space on, do nothing extra. We move brands to put them in the place. And that has been our commitment. Like you were saying, we highlight Reparations Book Club. It's a Black woman-owned book club in the community. Instead of just having all cannabis things, we got the books on the shelves as a part of the display. So people ask where you can buy it and go down the street. We did the Black Book to highlight the Black businesses, Swift Cafe on the Block, another Black woman-owned cafe. So when people come, we become like a destination point. We're close to LAX. Yeah. When you come in, don't just come to my business and then go over to Hollywood. Go down the street and get you some lunch. Yeah. Check out Leimert Park while you're there. And so
hot and cool, soul folks.
Yeah, yeah, hot and cool. Come on. That it was our intent and the model very intentionally, not just a design to attract people and have something very high end in our community, but to put that stake in the ground. Because they just opened two train stations. We know what happens in that across the country.
Oh, we just saw really the gentrifying game is happening around here, honey.
We want to regentrify and show Black folks how we do it and have them come.
Well,
come
that's a show. Regentrify.
Come and open up stores on the block and get the properties in our community and create that energy and be a model for how we should be existing in this day and age and not talking about it.
I remember back in the damn day when people would talk about weed, they would just be like, oh, that's for them stoners. You know, that's a pothead, you know. They're not gonna achieve anything in life. You know? They're not gonna ever achieve anything in life. And I recall the first time that I had marijuana, and all I remember doing was laughing. I laughed so much that I laughed till I had to take a nap. It was wonderful. Laughed till tears, just laughed. And I don't, you know, I can't really remember like what else was making me laugh like that or allowing me to be so free that I just couldn't help but giggle all over. What was that moment when you knew that marijuana was beneficial, not only for you, but for the people?
Oof. I was blessed once again. My dad studied Rastafarian principles.
Of course he did.
I love your dad.
So it was in my household growing up, and it was always such a very spiritual and intellectual connection when I would see them smoking, right? They would be at the round tables,
yes,
like some war rooms in the house. And my dad would have groups of people in there having all kind of conversations and teachings. And that was, you know, like in the Native community, that peace pipe. But it was something that just generated for me what I witnessed, just such greatness and joy. Then they were sitting around laughing and talking after that. And so my relationship, my mom calls it holy, my relationship with it. And I have three children. Their relationship with it is, you know, very spiritual and, like you're saying, Jill, a sense of joy. And so I never had those stigmas. And that has been a part of my quest is to fight those because I know how we use it, you know, not just smoking it, but for the topical purposes. I know when I give it to folks that, you know, I've been on chemotherapy and talking about my mom doesn't have an appetite. She can't eat. You know, I know for folks that are suffering from PTSD and depression and anxiety that come in the store just like mad. But as soon as they get that bag in their hand, you can feel that weight lift off of them. And so I've always seen it as very transformative. And I'm always pretty, I guess, raised pretty counterculture. I've never fell into those stigmas ever in life about weed. Maybe trying to say cannabis.
That's a word. It's about so many things that when you don't have the stigma,
Yeah.
The biases and the opinions don't affect you because you don't have it.
Don't have it.
But that's political too.
And that says a lot about out of the box parenting also, because I think a lot of times we talk about parenting and we've talked about it on this show. All of us have experienced this from a lot of places, is that people, you got to parent this certain kind of way. And it's like, look at what happens to your young people when you don't instill shame around certain things,
yeah.
When you're not afraid to allow them to understand and see what it takes to do what it is you're asking them to do. You cannot raise revolutionaries if you're not revolutionary in your thinking and in your doing. You have to say, you have to do, so that then they will say and do, and it's second nature. My God, today.
The first time I smoked weed with my grandmother and my father, it's life-changing. That moment, that breakdown of a wall, just saying, it's life-changing.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I was also going to say, too, don't forget, there was a documentary, and it's funny because me and Virgil have debated over this documentary, The Grass is Greener, that Fat Five Freddy did. And it's funny that we put stigmas on things, because at the end of the day, Aja, that stigma just comes from one of your favorite phrases, white supremacy. Because based on the history of marijuana and it being, you know, kind of associated with Black and brown people, that's all of a sudden it's associated with us. So it's bad. And so we take on that, because whatever the white man say is the law. And so now we telling our kids and stuff, that's bad, that's this, that's that. But that's crazy, right? When you think about it, it always brought joy. But because it brought joy initially to brown and Black people first, that's a problem.
Look, I came home that night after having them trees with my girlfriend. I came home that night, my mother, she caught me in the living room. She said, now mind you, I'm in college at this time. And she's like, you've been smoking that reefer? And I was like, yeah.
Come on, reefer.
I was just giddy. You've been smoking that reefer? I said, yeah. She said, I'm just so disappointed. Do you understand what this is? It's a gateway drug. It opens the door for other drugs. You know, the commercials, all the things that say things, right? Yeah. She said that.
Propaganda.
And I was like, Mom, let's just say I was 20 at the time. I said, Mom, have I been to jail? She's like, no. I was like, you know, do I have a lot of kids running around? She was like, no. That wouldn't be so bad. I said, but it would right now because I don't have the money. But, am I in trouble in any way? And am I in school? She was like, yeah. I was like, am I doing well in school? She was like, yeah. I was like, you might want to leave me alone about this one.
Yeah.
I'm not harming anyone at all. And I felt like it was such a benefit because I had been really stressed out working two jobs, going to school. And this one night, my girlfriend had as my mother would say, a doobie.
And you just melted in that seat. Like, that's what I needed.
And I doobied.
And I doobied.
my first time ever being experiencing cannabis wasn't smoking it. My mother made some brownies. And yeah, we was cooking Thanksgiving dinner.
That's next level.
That's
next level.
My mom made these brownies, and we was cooking Thanksgiving dinner. It was one of the first times we had like a really quiet Thanksgiving. It was just me and her at the time. My sister.
Oh, I thought you meant. Yeah.
No. My sister was boyfriend, fiance energy. Mm-hmm. She was gone, so it was just me and Big Sue. Big Geek, Big Sue. You gotta get to know Big Sue. You gotta watch you gotta listen to some of these old episodes. But I was like, she made these brownies, child. She turned on the music, and all I remember was how good the music sounded. And and we cooked that whole meal, and it was just like, it was just such a cool experience for me, because my mom, I grew up in a household too with both parents who smoked, but we just never saw it. It's so funny that they talk about things corrupting kids, and both my parents smoked. I had never seen them smoke before. I knew they did, but it just wasn't like a thing I ever saw really. But it's just funny that it wasn't even something that I had went to do on my own. But, you know, I'm glad to see the stigma kind of getting away and us getting more education about it. I know we're still in many of the states in the United States still on the fence around legalities and what state is legal here and not legal, or what's the vibes here. And I do know that young people are smoking a lot earlier. And so we're trying to get our young people to navigate what that means for them legally so that they don't get caught in between the gap. You know, one of the conversations that I'm having with my young folks is helping them to understand the state they live in. Having them understand a lot of these, that's why the diligence is important.
That what's even decriminalized, begin, what's not decriminalized.
What's decriminalized, what's not decriminalized. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important that we stay diligent no matter what we're doing, knowing that, yes, this work is being done, but there's so much more work to do. So we have to keep our young people informed that they have all the proper education, specifically around legally, because we don't want them to get so relaxed that they get out there and get caught out there, and then we have to deal with different type of legal situation.
I will go with that for the whole gamut, for all the things. When we're talking about sex, give them all the information. You know, we're talking about drugs, or I don't even like to call weed a drug. I just think that's unfair. I don't know. Friends, help me out with that one. Is weed a drug?
I'm looking at Kika.
Yeah, I got a new way of thinking for youth prevention and education on cannabis. We need to be teaching them about the business, because if you start looking at it more about the business opportunities, you start to lose the even time or the necessity for recreationally sitting around and using your time getting high. And when I say the business, it's just not the licenses. Okay. The ancillary side is so transferable, whether you're an electrician, whether you're a carpenter, whether you're in marketing, whether you're an accountant, lawyer. If you go into the niche of cannabis for any of those things, you know how many facilities have to be built right now that you need to know the right lighting for cultivation? If you just learn that one thing, you can take that. You know how many people are looking for skilled people in that area, even in the workforce? Cannabis is the fastest growing workforce across the country, more than nurses, more than EMT, more than electricians, the fastest growing industry, right? And so I would say to those young people early on, start investing your time reading and getting a part of and figuring out how you're about to game this damn system and be a part of the industry. Because I promise you, the reason why I fight so hard is because I know that I'm a part of being what's going to be in the history books and all realness of this. This is a brand new industry. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The mayor of London come down and visit our dispensary, and he did a trip. Yeah, about 3 or 4 months ago. And he visited about 5 licensed facilities across the country. They selected ours in Los Angeles as the only dispensary that he visited to be able to have an understanding of what this would look like to legalize in London.
Because people don't think about global legalization and how where we are in the sense of global legalization.
Yes.
And the brand newness of this industry, y'all. So when we learn these regulations, or we understand, and we start just participating, listen, you don't even got to do a lot of stuff, but just start being engaged, because you'll hear the opportunities of where you can be business planning. You'll hear the opportunities where you can... It's crazy, y'all. That's the reason why I fight so hard. That's the reason why I stay in this, because I do know what will happen 20 or 50 years from now in this moment in time. And so for all the Black people, specifically Black people, you know, great for everybody, but Black people.
No, we listen.
We've been the most incarcerated. We've been the most disproportionately arrested. We've been the most to lose our lives. We have the highest number of children in foster care because of the war on drugs. It is our obligation to be involved. It is our obligation to spread the word that these tax dollars, these licenses, and our skill set be used and co-opted and work together. And you got to have a team. I'm a year and 4 months in. I got 47 employees, right? 95% come from my community. And so the opportunities that are there, we're working. Actually, we just acquired the building next door to us to open up a mock training facility for retail. Yeah, Guerrilla University, liken it to McDonald's University.
And this is also for formerly incarcerated, right? Is that what I read?
Oh, yeah. Nice. Yes. Like creating that pathway. Look, we know the same, these laws are new. And that's how they're basing the whole industry, right?
Yeah.
So cultivation, you need a skill set, right, to know how to call.
Yeah.
Everything else are learned thing, and it's the rules and regulations. And so I just continue to encourage all of us that wouldn't think twice about it, just to understand how we can work cooperatively. And it will take a collective unit of us to do it, because it is expensive to get in. But that's, you know, that's an easy battle if we work together. And so that's really critical, y'all.
More conversation after the break.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Can you at least give us like three either organizations or pages that we should be following to be a part of the solutions, to be a part of the cult, like all the things?
Yes. Cannabis.lacity.org. Mm-hmm. That's the City of Los Angeles Cannabis Department. Cannabis.lacity.org. And when you click around and you go into the regulations, there's a social equity report that was written. Find that social equity report and read it. And it does a great job of concisely saying why we're here, the methodology of why social equity should be created based on these disproportionate arrests. And when I say that, break it down, LA is 8% Black folks, but we represented 40% of the arrests. Right. So when I say disproportionate,
yeah.
But then it also tells you all of the components, tells you the cost of starting up these businesses. Mm. It tells you the pieces that are necessary in every community if we want to start or actually press our city folks to have these sort of laws and regulations in place. To me, it's like the Bible of how it should have been executed. And LA did the complete opposite of everything that was in that $300,000 report. But to me, that's a great way, a simple way for us to just start grasping what it is.
Yeah.
If LA did it wrong, it sounds unhopeful for the other states who are so far behind.
No, but I think what she's saying is that if you look at what that framework is, it's a good place to start as you advocate in your particular city or state.
Okay.
That even though they didn't actually do it, the plan is good.
Is good.
And obviously every state has different laws and all of those things have to be considered. Definitely shout out to all the people that are in school currently or working in agriculture. That's a big one.
Yeah, and that's what she's talking about, skill set.
Yeah.
And shout out to, I just want to shout out to Tara Martin, one of the sisters that was in the fight to help lobby for Jersey and other states to become recreational. Cause we in there, y'all, when we see the sisters, we got to say their name. Like, cause nobody else will.
100%.
Now we do it and recognize too that it will open up federally sooner than later. And it doesn't take a lot of us, but there's a few of us in each one of these places when we're allowed to have interstate commerce, our ability to connect and work together is how we create this ecosystem of the supply chain within amongst ourselves. And that's why we continue to educate. Also, lifedevelopmentgroup.org is our website. And I just like to be a resource. Y'all come through to the dispensary, tap in anything that I can share once again and being the first. It was to be able to have the blueprint to then say, okay, y'all, this is how I did it.
I know. We just want to continue to support you beyond just coming to the store too. So, and that's all of our Black businesses. Like, yeah, we support by coming to the store, but if there's other ways to support, we need to know.
Yeah. I love the fact that that you circle back to business, you circle back to community, you circle back to these things and move away from the individual and remind us of what's necessary for us to do moving forward. I just really admire you in every way. I didn't know you prior to this interview, and I feel blessed and grateful and honored to have gotten to hear what you had to say today. Truthfully, it's such a good reminder. It's a good reminder because I think in this kind of capitalist society, we can really get really down about the possibility of what it looks like to be successful. What does it look like to be in business? What does it look like to grow community? Is it possible to do both, to get yourself a little bag, but at the same time, open up?
Girl, that you said a mouthful.
And I needed to hear this from you today because this has given me a different kind of, you know, battery in my back around what it can look like. And I just encourage everybody to continue to use your imagination, because I think what happens is that imagination gets stifled. Mm-hmm. You can't see that a thing is possible. You just you convince yourself it's just not going to happen. So I just am grateful for you today. I really am. Mm-hmm. I'm grateful for you. I'm grateful for your ancestors. I speak their names without knowing them, and I just thankful for them too.
You better say these words, Aja.
They did a thing, child. They did a thing. Nana did a thing, okay?
Come on. Give thanks. And you just touched on something that I believe is the core of how I move. And what I've seen is this is the fourth business that I've started. But this is the one where it was always about after Sweet Strings and losing my music academy. It was always about, let me go make this money and then I can go give back. And I had to take a different approach because it wouldn't work with just me being here standing alone, is that let me give back while I'm building. And every time I stay centered on that, the universe opens just miraculous doors that is not anything about my work. And I would say and challenge us all to be able to figure that out and to challenge ourselves to not wait for the give back. But figure out for the work that we do, how it can align. Like I said, I had to write the cliff notes for myself. So then why am I not sharing the cliff notes at the same time that I'm learning it? What we often do is wait
till we accomplish it.
Everything. Now I'm going to give you a tidbit and worried about them. Someone else that I'm giving that to compete and knock me out. But it really is important. And I think the other side of that is my mission has always been to find this for-profit that funds my nonprofit. And I came to cannabis because I intend on opening up Sweet Strings again in our music academy for the kids. And so that is really what motivates me when I want to sit down and get tired. It's that this has to work because we have to be able to reinvest and fund those things that really make a difference for our children.
Our hearts are full.
I'm proud of my neighborhood.
Man.
If you might do me the honors of allowing me to read the mission.
Oh, yes, Agent.
Let's.
All right. This is the mission for Gorilla RX Wellness, correct?
Yes, right.
We are the physical manifestation of Black feminine resilience, power, and creativity. We are the advocates for those fundamentally oppressed by America's unjust criminal justice system. We are the future legacy of healers, hustlers, and history makers, diligently honoring the strong women who came before us. We are the promise of a brighter, more equitable future in South Central LA, and might I add, myself, the world. Y'all take care.
Blessings, y'all. Blessings.
because, I mean, that's all I got. That's really it. Our hearts are full.
I know, Jill.
We've been educated in so many ways. Please remember to rewind this and play it back and slow down and take the cliff notes. Take the cliff notes. None of us here at J.Ill know everything, but we're learning as we grow. And it is a pleasure to share anything that we're learning with you. Thank you so much, y'all, for listening. Peace.
How do you eat an elephant?
One bite at a time.
Hello, listeners. It's Amber, your fearless producer here. We have been so excited to get this episode to you. Black women really do get us higher. To learn more about Gorilla Rx and all the amazing things that they are doing in the community and all the incredible products they provide, check out their website, GorillaRxWellness.com. The site is literally as beautiful as the store that Laia described. Kika also left us with some incredible resources in this episode. I'll drop links to those sites in the show notes. And if you want to learn more about cannabis and spirituality, I'll leave a link that explains how Rastafarians use the herb for spiritual connection.
Hi, if you have comments on something we said in this episode, call 866-HEY-JILL. If you want to add to this conversation, that's 866-439-5455. Don't forget to tell us your name and the episode you're referring to. You might just hear your message on a future episode.
Thank you for listening to Jill Scott Presents J.Ill, the podcast.
Yes, Karima. I'm sorry.
You distracted my whole show, mommy, when you walked by. You distracted the whole show.
Laia's mother just walked by and her abs were giving what needed to be gave. Yes, Karima. Yes, Karima.
Yes.
Come on over. I'm sorry, y'all. For those who are listening, Laia's mom is at work. She's amazing. We want to give it up to Big Karima. She came through there and showed us her ab work and it was fantastic.
Fantastic. J.Ill is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.